Well, first, the title would be Do Up That Thing. And Lauryn Hill would be the star. And the movie would be delayed a year because they could never get her on set.
You're listening to We Die First, a podcast for black horror fans by black horror fans.
Spooky Squad.
Oh my God, do you hear that?
What is that? What's the sound?
Sounds like you're talking to dogs. What's that sound? Do you hear that? What's
I
that sound? What do you
feel
hear?
a chill, like I could be in Antarctica.
That was slick. Someone's been practicing.
Someone practice her openings. Guys, we are not alone today. We are very, very, very honored to have two very smart people. They said they're not that smart. I think they're very smart. They have books. We don't. So that's my marker of, do you have a book? If you don't, not that smart.
But also to clarify, not just owning books. I assume they own many books, but they have
Yes.
written books.
They have written books. We have the authors of The Black Guy Dies First, Black Horror Cinema from Fodder to Oscar, Robin Armin Coleman and Mark H. Harris here with us. Say hello to the people.
Hello. Hello.
This is very exciting for us. We've been pretty pumped. I'm not gonna lie. I'm sweating a little bit, a little nervous.
Yeah, I'm nervous.
I'm a bit nervous.
This is huge for me because I don't know if I've talked about it on this podcast, but I'm famously not a reader. I'm just one of those boys. But this is truly the first book I've read for pleasure in years. It's like my day job, I'm a grant writer. I read all the time. I'm like, this is boring. But then I was like, Sonique put me onto this book, and I was like, I gotta read this. And I don't want to brag. I read the whole thing. Started 2024 off strong by reading a book.
One single book. But yes, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast today.
Thank you. I'm cracking up already. I'm supposed to say thank you for having us here, but Andrew already broke me. So.
Nice, good. Starting off strong.
No, this is fantastic. Robin Armin Coleman is a professor of media studies and African American and African studies at the University of Virginia. She also authored Horror Noir, a history of Black American horror from the 1890s, excuse me, to the present, which I have on my desk as well. And we also have Mark H. Harris here, who is an entertainment journalist who's written about cinema and pop culture for over 20 years. For New York Magazine, Vulture, Rotten Tomatoes, About.com, Pop Matters, and Black Horror Film. I don't know. You might have heard of about a few of those things, guys.
Have you heard of Black People Spooky Squad?
Have you? Name one Black person, Santa. But yes, thank you for joining us. Before we get started, we want to just, I mean, allow you to introduce yourself some more. Tell us about yourselves and how you got to the point where you are, writing amazing books about Black people in horror.
I'll let Mark go first.
Okay, well, as you said, I'm Mark Harris. I go by Mark H. Harris usually because there's a much more famous Mark Harris who's also a movie journalist who's written a lot of great stuff. So I'm the other Mark Harris. But I don't know, I've always had a love for horror movies and, being a black person who likes to see himself on the screen, it hasn't been a great journey, in historically. So I kind of at some point, in around 2005 or so, I thought, I'm interested in this topic. Let me see, look online to see what kind of stuff is online about it. And I couldn't find anything. And so I said, I watched a bunch of horror movies. I pay attention to, black roles in movies. So, if no one's going to have a website about this topic, then I may as well create one myself. So I created blackhorrormovies.com. It's been almost 20 years now, I guess. And yeah, just kind of chronicle the history of black people in horror movies, do reviews and essays and little articles and stuff. And so it's been, a great journey. It's kind of join me up with Robin, you know, and then that's kind of led to the whole book thing. She's kind of been the grease that has greased the wheels in terms of getting everything, the book moving. But, you know, I kind of helped a little bit here and there, and you know, kind of added my blend of stupidity to the content. So, yeah.
I
Amazing.
rebuke everything Mark said. There's so the first is I'm going to skip my origin story and correct a few facts that Mark offered. And the first is there is another terrific writer, Mark Harris, but Mark H. Harris these days is everywhere in the press. The reviews for The Black Guy Dies First have just been knock it out of the park. Someone sent me an article. I don't know if you've saw see, if you've seen this, Mark, just yesterday, where again we get another shout out in the press. And I think this one is in either the Post or the Times. I have to check because I was like, oh my God, we made the first paragraph again, where they're talking about it's a historical review of Donald Bogle and toms, coons, mulattoes, mammies. And like the second sentence in that review, which is supposed to be about Donald Bogle, is about The Black Guy Dies First and how it's the next generation of seminal work. So that's Mark H. Harris's claim to fame. But the other is how important blackhorrormovies.com is, not just for horror fans, but for scholars like myself. I've said I've never hidden the fact that horror noir wouldn't be horror noir without blackhorrormovies.com. It is an invaluable resource for scholars and researchers just right alongside fans. So his essays, his reviews of those films aren't little essays. They are whole wealth, vaults of knowledge that are unpacked that deeply informed my thinking.
Thank you. I'll send you a check in the mail.
Robin, I wish I
That
could
sounds
carry you
fantastic.
around for like whenever I'm like, you know, I'm just doing my little thing. She's like, no.
No, ma'am.
No, you're not. You're doing big things. It's like,
Big
damn,
things.
I felt motivated hearing that. I'm like,
Right. I was
yeah.
liking the dynamic I'm feeling you two have, and it's kind of like Sanique and I, except the difference is I'll be like, Sanique does all these good things and I'm just here, and she'll go, exactly,
Yeah.
and then we just continue. And I'm like,
Like
nice.
true.
Yeah.
Andrew, I love you.
Oh, I love you.
I say it a
It's funny,
love. It
Robin,
only
I did. I did see that article in the Times, I think, at
Was it the
Robin, and
Times?
not to rain on the parade, but I did actually also notice when they mentioned The Black Guy Dies First. They said Robin R. Coleman's The Black Guy Die First.
I
They
know I wasn't going
didn't
to
mention
say
my name
all
at all
that.
in
They
the
did
article.
leave your name off. That was not okay.
That's shady.
It is shady, but we know that it was a Harris Coleman production.
Yes, a Harris Coleman joint, if you will. No, but that's amazing. Anyone who's listening, definitely check out this book. It's incredibly insightful, really funny. I love that it's kind of written like a bit of a guide, like almost like a movie guide. And there's really awesome stuff about different Black horror movie tropes, which I feel like we talk about quite a bit, but they definitely delve into a lot more that I just never really thought about. You know, I think about the
Oh,
typical,
yeah.
like, oh yeah, like the magical Negro or like a sacrificial Negro. And then like other tropes I just never really thought of, but I'm like, oh my damn, that is true. The
And how they
seductress
like
is real.
evolve into the modern age. I really appreciated that. You're like, this is the 20 like tens like magical Negro. I'm like, that's crazy. Also, my favorite part was I'm a huge Ghostbusters fan, so when y'all did the section of like this is the black guy. No other distinguishing characteristics other than he is black and just there. And then Ghostbusters was the picture. I was like, damn it. It's true, but I was like, darn
He
it.
was just there.
He was just there. He was the only one that wasn't a doctor. He could have been. Could have also just been a doctor. But no.
That's true. And he's heated about it. He's not letting us go. He is reminding us in interviews that that was his treatment in the film.
Yeah, as he should.
As he should. Yeah. And I feel like it's going to be fun talking about the role of just like status in this movie we're covering too, because I know there's an interesting, I mean, there's interesting racial dynamics happening, but also like class ones of just like kind of like the division of labor within this camp, which I thought was like, this is fascinating. I don't know. I knew we were having real film professionals here, so I watched the movie with different eyes this time. Like, speak, let's dig a little bit deeper outside of just do you like it or do you not like it? But
I didn't look at it that deep.
See,
Might not be
listen, your name's already on the books. So you don't have to. You're like, listen, I already told y'all what I know. I'm like, no, I
prepared.
have to like prove.
Yeah, we're still in the proving grounds, yeah.
Yes. I was definitely a teacher's pet, so I'm like, I have to make sure I know everything about this movie before we get in. But you guys are joining us during Alien April. We're digging into horror movies that, you know, focus on extraterrestrials. Last week we did what was it? Invasion of the Body Snatchers, but I feel like it's actually really appropriate that we watched it before this one because like, ooh, interesting parallels with that. And we saw Cloverfield. But this week, y'all, we're going to be we watched The Thing from 1982, directed by John Carpenter. It's based on the book Who Goes There? And there was also a 1950s version of this and one that came out in 2011. Did you know that, Andrew?
I have seen bits of that one. I've never seen this one. So I saw bits of that one for some reason, and then I was looking it up. Like from the Norwegian side of everything. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Because I was like, I don't know why I missed that. I was like, I only know these two versions of it. But it stars, oh, wow, okay. So I like to look at the Wikipedia for like the quick information that they have here. The only star they have here is Kurt Russell.
Wilford Brimley.
I'm like, Kurt Russell. I'm like, oh yeah, Kurt Russell is there, but also like,
Keith David, pre super baritone voice.
right. I'm like, this is rude.
T.K. Carter. I came for T.K. Carter.
This is an awesome movie for like character actors. I was thrilled. I was like, one, bring back the character actor heavy film. That's not a thing we see anymore. I was like, this is great. Like, it's a bunch of just guys. Just damn. It almost felt like, before we really dig into it, I feel like in another universe, this is like an 80s sitcom. Like Taxi, and it's just like it's just them at the camp before bad things started. Like they're just hanging out, you know?
They're just hanging out. They're playing chess and pool. I know, it seemed like a fun time. It made me want to become a scientist.
It is the opposite for me, this movie. I was like, like maybe we shouldn't know too much. But the movie focuses on a group of men who are working out of this research station in Antarctica when they stumble upon the thing, an extraterrestrial life form that assimilates and imitates living organisms. And chaos ensues.
Truly.
Boy, does it ensue. So this was a first watch for me. I don't know. I mean, obviously, it was not a first watch for the two of you. Andrew, was this a first watch?
Yeah.
First watch, yeah. Delightful.
It was great because I've seen it obviously parodied 1 million times.
Yeah.
I knew like the blood test. I didn't know like the specifics of it. I just remember like metal went into blood and then it jumped. But I was just like, damn. I was like, what rat? Good thinking. I wouldn't have thought that clearly.
No.
He's like, oh, and he was also, I mean, he was in the government, but he was a pilot. He wasn't
He
necessarily a
wasn't like a
scientist.
scientist,
He's
no.
just like, I have a hypothesis. And I was like, wow, that's crazy. I have never thought in my life.
He ran with it.
And he just went.
Robin and Mark, what was your first impression, I think, when you first saw this, or if you remember when you first saw this movie?
I don't know if I remember when exactly I first saw it. I'm sure it must have been like in the, I didn't see it, when it came out, in theaters, or a little bit young for that, but Probably when I first started getting to horror movies was like the mid 80s. So I probably saw it around then, mid to late 80s. And oh, yeah, it blew me away. It was immediately one of my favorites and one of my go-tos. So I've seen it. I mean, I've probably seen it about a half a dozen times. But it's interesting watching it this week. I watched it on Blu-ray for the first time, and I hadn't seen it in a few years. But so I don't know if it's because of the clarity of the picture, but I did notice things that I hadn't seen before. And I was like, "Is that, does the doctor have a hoop nose ring? I don't know if you all noticed
Yes,
that."
he did.
I'm like, "What is going on? Why is nobody mentioning this? Why is this doc? I wouldn't trust the doctor with a hoop nose ring. That he would immediately be on the top of my list of stuff." So I'm just like, "Wow, how did I not notice that before?" But you know, it's still something. It's the gift that keeps on giving, I think. It's a great, deep movie.
Amazing. What about you, Robin?
So first, I'm in the middle of writing a syllabus for a class I'm doing in the fall at UVA on the history of Black horror. And I've suddenly fro become frozen because Andrew and Sonique, am I pronouncing your first name correctly?
Yeah, you got it right.
Do I have the right inflection?
Yes.
Oops, we froze. Okay.
No, you're good.
This is your first watch of the thing, and now I'm panicked because I'm building this class on the assumption that some of these students have watched these movies already. And now I have realized I'm making notes saying, okay, I have to do pre-watches on this. And the thing is a movie they're going to have to pre-watch because it's fabulous, right?
It's amazing.
It's totally amazing. And there's it's so rich when you're talking about the study of Black people in horror films. Including why we titled our book "The Black Guy Dies First," and then said, "Psych, no, not always." Including spoiler alert, this film. I love this film, and I do think I saw it first run because I saw Alien first run, and I seem to recall
Sick.
comparing the two. And I think I might have written about that there was something really interesting about Yaphet Kotto's Parker. And then Keith David's character in the film, and contrasting those two, I seem to remember in my young person's mind that I was often even kind of conflating not the actors, but their roles, because they both are sort of set up as, you know, like these mechanics who are a little bit of a hothead and who aren't fully respected, but turn out to be sort of heroic, maybe. And so I seem to remember watching these, if not first run in, very close real time back to back.
No, that is interesting because I have seen Alien. I haven't seen it in a long time, but even when I first started this one, I was like, wait, like when I got a child, I was like, isn't this? I was kind of a little confused. I was like, wait, am I misremembering? Maybe I have seen this movie. And I was like, no. It's just that like the characters are very similar. But I was like, I feel like I've seen this, but I have not. No, I also no pressure that like they haven't seen it. It's like they'll figure it out. They'll watch it. They'll watch it.
I feel like just because I had all of these on heavy rotation, I just realized I made a note, Mark. I'm going to have to do a little bit more setting up of some of these films that, you know, classics for us aren't classics for everybody.
Facts. You know, and I think I've avoided it. This is like my own bias. I grew up with mostly women in my house. I grew up very much, despite being a horror fan, being very much a girl movie person. So like when I don't see a woman, I'm just like, I don't want to watch this. Like this is a it's very binary of me. I'm like, this is a boy movie. I don't want to watch this one. So I just have it and I'm like, no, this is
Yeah, there
actually
is.
fascinating, but it's like, damn, there's no women in this.
There, I mean, there's so no women in this that the only voice is the on the computer. It's Adrienne Barbeau who's the voice on the computer when Mac is playing chess. Otherwise, there are no women involved in the making of this movie, which is why the 2011 prequel is important because they sort of remedy that maybe critique about the thing and center a woman in that, star a woman in that film.
Isn't it funny how there are no women in this movie, but he still managed to call her a bitch? I'm like, damn. Like,
Dump a drink on her.
right. I'm like, she's not even real. Like, what is, even the conversation of like Childs being, we'll get into it, like, can't be a leader because he's like too like aggressive. And I'm like, I don't know. I feel like you all are. I think I'm watching this as a woman. I'm like, everyone here is just like doing too much.
It's
But
a locker room, right? It's they're setting us up to believe, yeah.
yeah, definitely. But if you are ready, I think we can dig into the nitty-gritty of the movie.
Let's do it.
Yes. So in this movie, the black guy does not die first. It's Norwegian. And that's real white. That's real white. It's the whitest, in my opinion. That's the whitest you can get.
No contest, sure.
No
Yeah.
contest. So we're in Antarctica and we have this Norwegian helicopter that's like chasing after this dog, trying to
There,
shoot
yeah,
the dog.
huge Sarah Palin vibes. Yeah.
Yes, very. I'm like, are they hunting? I was like, wait,
Yeah.
what are we? This is weird. But we quickly find out that, well, I mean, I guess unless you speak Norwegian, but like they're pursuing this dog for a reason. The American station comes upon them. They fire a few shots and the Norwegian ends up dying and the dog joins them and their helicopter crashes as well and like explodes. So they don't really know what they're chasing. They just know like, I don't know, maybe they went like kind of cabin fever over there in the Norwegian camp, got tired of eating open-faced sandwiches. I don't know. I'm not here to judge, but they freaked out. They're going berserk.
They're freaking out, seeing the most action they've probably ever seen ever. And
Honestly, that probably wouldn't like exciting though. Like it's
yeah,
horrible what happened. You're like, oh my God, this is like a change
I
in the
feel like I would
day.
have been on edge. And then so like I was like, well, that person's clearly that dog was being chased by a helicopter, and they're just like, oh, come here, dog, let me hold you. And I was like, God, stop it.
Americans.
Ugh, Americans.
It's like clearly this dog is innocent. But
The moral is that if Norwegians loved guns as much as the US, he would have been a better shot and would have killed the dog immediately, and the movie would have been over.
He was
True.
holding the dog. It was not moving, and he whole missed and shot a man's leg.
That's a very good point. Like this is like wild shots going on. Also completely white background too, and the dog has color. So I'm like, that should have been an easy shot. It's daylight. But anyway, so they take the dog in and we meet this band of grizzled men in this station. What I mentioned, this is very character actory and is something that we've lost, is that like I like watching these older movies when we're going through this podcast because it's always interesting to just compare like what would this movie look like today? I appreciate that all of these people felt like lived in characters, you know, like in a way it's almost kind of like a fun, like I said, like a fun sitcom, but it felt like these are real. They felt very real, whereas I feel like today, not all the time, but it's like, I don't know. I think my point is that today they'd be too hot. And I'm like, okay, yeah, like you, okay, like you really are just a scientist in Antarctica. I'm like, no, these people are like, these are real people. Like I believe that they actually are in this space and that they've lived here for a long time and that they're not even, there isn't really necessarily a camaraderie, which I think that would happen a lot today. It's like, there is almost like already kind of like a tension there that I liked, you know? I feel like today there'd be a need to be like, they're friends and they all become suspicious of each other and they fall apart. It's like, no, they already are kind of like individualistic out for themselves. And that's kind of the point.
I think that's right. That really excited me about that's what sort of made it very realistic. I completely agree with you. There are class tensions, there are racial tensions, there is hierarchical tensions between the people who are managing the camp versus the people who are keeping the camp running. All of that is permeating through. And I really like that there's a clear reminder they're coworkers. They're not necessarily friends. And there's a hierarchy among these coworkers. That's probably one of the more realistic representations. And yes, you're absolutely right. This would be, this would look a lot more like Barbie in 2024 than what we get in 82. So, or 81. I think that you're absolutely right, both about the aesthetic, but also about the relationships.
Yeah.
the new thing remake is just a bunch of buddies being hot in Antarctica when a random hot person is just a little off, and then they're not friends anymore because it was all just based on bullshit. Yeah, I could write a screenplay.
I just love seeing you like a pitch and be like, this is about hot people, okay? This movie,
they're like,
is
go on.
But hotties, and they're like, yes.
They don't even need to hear more. They already like sent, they zell.
$100 billion.
Title is Do Up That Thing.
Oh, yeah.
Rob, Lauren Hill.
She does.
Everybody get this? I hope so.
That'd be sick.
That would be amazing.
And the hardest part of the movie was getting Lauren Hill back in the studio.
Yeah. Yeah. Make sure her chakras are aligned first. Yeah. I don't know. I think Mercury's in retrograde right now, so I don't think she'd show up. Sure, she wouldn't.
Do you like to, I like up top, because, you know, it's like things are happening. They're like, oh, the Norwegians were at a site like a couple miles north. So they're like, all right, let's go check it out. And you already, like you said, they're like showcasing some tension. Like this other guy's like, I'll go, I'll take him. It's like, no, nah, I don't trust you. You're not flying me to this place. But also interspersed are just shots of this dog looking so suspicious. and you're like, I know that's just a dog being a dog, but I'm trained to know there's something else. This stoic dog.
Ennio Morricone's score is telling you that this dog is something wrong with this dog.
Yeah, it's like this dog is not attached to these humans, but he's watching them get in the helicopter and leave. I was like, wow.
The dog is arguably the best actor in the movie. I mean, the dog,
for sure.
It's just like pausing, looking around, looking sus, just, you know, glancing at everybody. And then the one where the dog goes into the cage with the other dogs and the other dogs are just lying there. And he's like, just looking straight ahead. It's like, wow, that dog in a war.
No, seriously. I thought when I was like, how do they, I mean, obviously the trainers, but I'm like, damn, like how did that dog manage to just like sit like that? It's just a weird, it's an unnatural way for a dog to lie down. I was like, this is unsettling. But yeah, so they decided to go up to the Norwegian spot to check out what's happening. And it's a mess. It's a whole mess. It's been burnt down. They find these corpses, but it's like not a human, but like kind
they are
of is.
Shockingly chill with what they find. And chill enough to be like that the pilot, presumably no scientific training, is like, we gotta take this back. We need to touch this and take it back. And I'm like, no, probably not. Not me.
But he's Kurt Russell. He's Kurt Russell. He knows.
He's Kurt Russell, who's been drinking the entire time, but still also has like perfectly lined eyes.
That's what you want in your pilot. You want your pilot to be a drunk.
I was like, he's really drunk.
Straight up drunk.
No one's talking about it. Guys being dudes in Antarctica, I guess. So they come back with this body, and before we get into it, can I comment on
how it's smoking?
Well, it's smoking one, but also comment on just like the special effects and
so good.
So this actually scared me. Like I don't get scared very easily anymore because we watch a lot of these. This is freaked me out. It grossed me out a lot.
It was really interesting, right? Because like practical. And at one point I was like, how did they build this? Because I was like, they had to build the innards or just, you know, like they built the thing and it's like, but we have to stuff it, but still in a way that they can still cut into it. So it's not just like this box of goop. Yeah. I was like, wow, not me.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing that's like when we horror fans who grew up in the 80s complain about, you know, CGI effects nowadays and stuff. And we're like, oh, why don't you just do practical effects? This is the kind of movie that's like, you can point at and be like, do it like that. Mm-hmm. That is still holds up today. It's still gross. It's still effective. If they had done this in CGI, it wouldn't have been nearly as effective. It would have been.
I need to see that it is actually just wet.
Everything
That's
is too
half the
wet.
horror. It's just moist. The more moisture, the more scared I am.
So scary. It reminded me a lot of Society and like the
Yeah,
special
just
effects there of just like
goopy horror.
goopy body parts all mushed together. It's just, well, it's making my skin crawl actually thinking about it. But yeah, so they bring this creature back, and at one point they're like, oh yeah, send that dog back to the kennel. But one of the guys who's been taking care of him, Clark, has been acting weird. Sad to find out at the end he wasn't a thing. I'm like, he's just
He's
weird.
just weird. He just loves his
Oh,
dogs.
he's just kind of, you know, people who are like, I love dogs more than humans. That's just him. Like, he just is a weirdo. I felt really bad for him.
Yeah.
This movie made me think a lot about what are the weird quirks, and I'm curious to know what you guys think. What are the weird quirks that you do that someone would then be like, you're the thing because of that weird thing you just did?
Keeps trying out these bits all the time. He knows they're not funny, but he keeps trying.
I
I
think
think I.
my, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, go. I was just gonna say, I think just being generally antisocial, being the person that, if neighbors, if I like turn out to be a serial killer, neighbors would be like, oh, he was just so quiet and he kept to himself. That kind of thing. That would be
You couldn't
me.
see it coming.
Robin, how about you?
No, I think Mark stole my answer. So I completely agree. Somewhere, we have a kind of a running joke that our nicknames are Snuffleupagus in this household because people talk about us and they say we exist, but nobody's ever really seen us a lot. So I think that would be a clue that we might be in this household anyway. We might be things all up in here because our neighbors don't know us, they've never seen us. They can't quite describe us. They're like, I think they were there. I don't know. So I think that's it.
That's
I
funny.
think you were
My
a good
wife
one.
calls me. My wife says that she calls me Snuffleupagus to her coworkers because they're not sure that I really exist. So
Are you
I'm there with
kidding
you.
me? We've
That's.
never had this conversation. My colleagues call my husband Snuffleupagus as well. He's not a great fan of that, but the same. We've never, look what you've done. We have never bonded over this moment.
This podcast brings people closer
We
together.
die
I'll be
first.
the we die first
Bring
together.
people together. I think my thing would be, my husband has commented that many people have commented that I walk too quietly, so I kind of just appear in a room. So it startled people a lot. So I think that would just that naturally just making people feel unsettled just by my presence, I guess. It'd be like, it's her. I'm not sneaking up on you. I just I'm light-footed, I guess. But yeah, so they send the dog into the kennel, and that's when we have that scene when he it was so that actually did upset me. I went full American. I'm just like, wait, the dog. Like he just he got him.
I was like, my thoughts are always, like I think in a lot of just like if you are scared in real life, you just try to make it rational. And then so I'm always like, someone would have heard this ruckus happening. Why is no one running? And then he ran. I was like, okay, cool. Checks out. And then he goes to open the kennel first. I was like, turn the lights on. Turn the lights on and see the thing. Don't, I have never once run into a kennel to just like to find a noise that I could not see what was making
Have
it.
you ever run into a kennel?
Right.
I grew up in small town Wisconsin, so I have, but because it was also broad daylight and I wanted to play with the dogs.
I
Okay,
run into many a kennel.
I've never run into a kennel where sounds were coming out of. That's fair. I've never done that. But yeah, that was I do like that we immediately, it wasn't like the dogs were all dead, but then there was the dog normal. I did like that they all saw it, weird transformation. I'm like, cool, because I that's something that happens in a lot of movies. They're just like, we don't believe you. Something came in and killed all the dogs except one. And I'm like, nah, like trim the fat.
Yeah,
We
I
saw the
appreciated
thing.
that. The pacing in this movie is really good. Like I like that, like we get it, and like they have to use this flamethrower immediately. Though Childs afterwards is still kind of like skeptical somehow. I'm like, you just saw what like whatever that was not normal. Like
There's
something
still,
is happening.
like, the next scene is literally the doctor being like, it seems to be an organism that can replicate anything, perfectly. And then you're like, yep, that's what it is. We don't need to hash this out. And then you're the one person's like, so like what? What is this? Like an alien? And the guy's like, I don't know, I'm a pilot. You saw it too. Just to take it's weird. Let's just settle on the fact that it's weird. Doesn't matter where it came from.
I love that. Yeah.
The scene in the kennel back to the dogs that I've been researching and I really haven't been able to get a good answer on is if you remember the dogs are sort of chewing on the
The wire,
wire cage and how they did that. I'm really, because Andrew, you talked about special effects. I want to know what that really was. How did they do it? But whatever the material was, I've watched it a million times. It's solid. It's like wire. I pray that because I was like, did they not harm animals in the making of this? But it's, I don't know how they get them to do that, but it's very impressive whatever happened is happening there.
Yeah,
It's
you're
very
like
cool.
the thing just started water cannoning these dogs, and I was just like, oh, that probably didn't make that dog super happy. But I
Yeah.
also was very much wondering bull thing that they're like, this
I hope
section of fence is edible,
so.
and we covered it in meat grease so that dog's just going to town.
They're like peanut
But
butter on it. It's just
yeah, I was watching it. I'm like, oh, that dog needs to get out. But
like.
how is it doing that? How is the animal actor doing this?
You know,
Made
Mark?
a,
Need?
I don't know. Maybe they made a cage out of sausages or something. I don't know. I don't know what it was, but it was.
Sausages.
But
Oh, that's funny. No, it is an amazing scene though. But to your point, Andrew, I appreciate that people are activated pretty immediately in terms of like shit's going on. We gotta be serious about this. We're creeped out. Also, we haven't talked about him. Tootie Knowles on the roller skates.
That was a cool bit.
I didn't learn anyone's name. I just like Tootie for the facts of life is in this movie. And I loved it so much. But also it's like one of those like weird like early 80s movies things. Like you just have to have a character with a quirk. His like thing is roller skates. Like
And you could tell this guy quirky, 'cause he's like, hey, shut off that music. He's like, for sure. And like the guy wasn't even there watching him, and he just pretended to shut off and
he
kept fucking
doesn't quite
grooving.
say for sure, does he, Mark? I mean, he drops the B word twice, which is Buona. So the first time, he's sort of mad because Benning is like, turn down that music. I got shot. Ah! And he's skating around. Was on skates, right? It was just a thing. But he's like, forget you, Buona. And then he does it again, where he says, "We Buona," so in French and Buona, and both of those gesture back to the Ooga Booga that we talk about in Horror Noir, and we talk about in The Black Eye Dies First, those jungle films where they would get like actors from LA to pretend like they were somewhere in Africa, right? Like Africa continent. And they would talk to white men and say, yes, Buona, yes, Buona. So there is what I like about the thing when you talked about these class divisions, there's a recognition of earlier horror films and how they treated black actors, black characters, that they had to be deferential, that they were always on safari. This is a different kind of safari, but it's not like the safari of the 20s, 30s, and 40s. This is a safari where you have black people who are like, I'm not having this. I'm not your slave. I'm not bowing down. Like F you, Buona. And that's why he's saying it in that way. And that's a pretty reflexive moment, racially reflexive moment, I think.
This is the
That's
most
fascinating.
intelligent episode we will ever do, ever.
No, I'm learning. I did not know because I remember him
I was,
saying that. I
yeah.
was like, what does that mean? Like, I would like.
Same. I was just
At first,
like,
I thought that was his name. I was like, what?
was like, oh, this is some very neat dialogue with that has no context outside of this line.
I'm like, that's not his name?
No,
Like, what?
I think it means, I think it translates to master or boss or something like this. It's kind of like, if you would say, yes, boss, it's kind of a sarcastic kind of thing. So, Yeah, I also was wondering about that. I was wondering if it was written in the script like that, or if that's something that DC Carson kind of improvised, or what? Because it would seem very, I don't know if John Carpenter would put that in the script or not. It seemed very particular to the Black experience that it sound, my guess would be that the actor kind of just improvised that and threw it in, but I don't know. I haven't read the script, so but yeah, I definitely did notice. That was interesting.
That's cool. Yeah, no, if he did, that's like, huh, okay. And I almost like rewatch it like with that context too. I'm like,
We should just take
what else did
Robin's
I miss?
class. Do you have like a virtual
Right.
option?
Yeah, I do a virtual option. I do it for free. You
Yeah.
got a Groupon for
Yeah, you need a
the
TA? Yeah.
No, but where were we? So yeah, so now they're starting to be like, okay, they found the data from the Norwegians, who they, I love
Please,
the fun, like
data,
the
the
Swedish slash
VHS.
Norwegians. Yeah, it's just like video. And that they had been on this dig site and they found this spacecraft that actually we had seen earlier on. They found it, but they're like, dude, this ice is like over 100,000 years old. Like this has been here for a very, very long time.
I do love just them getting evidence and they're being like, yep, that makes sense. Again, we saw a dog alien. So anything you tell me now is very true.
God, I love that. I love how quickly everyone's bought into really committing to the bit.
Yeah, they definitely did some improv.
Everyone is yes
They
anding.
were yes anding so hard.
Yes, I don't. Let's get to it. Let's get to it. So now they're like, okay. Also, he starts to like the lead scientist. Which one is this? Is this Blair? No.
Wilford Brimley.
Yeah, him. He's like, sorry, I don't have anyone's name. He's, I mean, he's also starting to figure out like what exactly is happening. He's like, this thing is like somehow assimilating. It can imitate anything, anybody, and that's what's happening here. And he's starting to get quite paranoid because there's no way to really, well, until you find out,
Well,
there's no way to know who is it could already gotten some of them and they don't really
He's
know.
running the most spot-on computer program that he could have had in that moment, where it's just like probability that your friends are monsters. I was like, wow, that's super specific for your situation. That's crazy that you went into Antarctica with this program. Like, this was pre-Google. He couldn't get that. He couldn't download it. He was prepared.
Except his model looked like, what is the Atari? Is that Space Invaders or
Space
something?
Invaders. It was just,
Yeah,
yeah, it was
Space
actually
Invaders.
just a sentient computer being like, you're gonna die. It was Space Invaders, literally.
Though I do love movies from the 80s that have computers because it's like, we still haven't figured out what computers can actually do. Is there like anything? And I'm like,
Yeah.
yeah, sure. Like, this is fun. Yeah, so they're starting to get a bit a paranoid about who could be a thing or what it could be. Also, they no longer have access to radio because Blair has freaked out and starts like destroying everything. So like we also can't even call out. It's winter in Antarctica. Nobody's coming in, no one's leaving. So they're fully isolated, which in my opinion is the scariest part of this movie, is just the idea of like, you mean no one's coming to get us? Like, what do you mean?
I ran out of snacks a week ago. This is does not bode well for
We were supposed
me.
to be rationing the snacks. Oh, I ate them all. You should have told me.
Brimley has diabetes. What's he gonna do?
Sorry, what'd you say?
You know what? And Wilford Brimley has diabetes, so I don't know what he's
Yeah,
gonna do.
he ran out of insulin immediately. He only remembered to pack his computer with the super intelligent program, but none of his life-saving drugs.
I know. You know he got the sugar. He out here acting stupid. I forgot about those commercials. Aw.
Diabetes, as I said, as he said.
Diabetes.
Diabetes.
And also they found at this point too, Fuchs has died. They found his burnt corpse. Because like he either has been assimilated or he thought he was going to be and killed himself. Like they're all falling apart at this point, and they've isolated I think Blair because it's like it's getting out of control. And this is where you needed a feminine touch in this movie because I'm like, fellas, let's regroup. Let's calm down. Okay.
The Fuchs
We need to calm
death,
down.
though, is interesting, right? Because remember, this is the 81 movie is based on, or it's sort of a, it's based on the 51 movie, The Thing from Another World. And so what's interesting about in The Thing from Another World, which they do pick up in the 2011 movie, but that's, it's all very complicated. In The Thing from Another World, there's this scene where all of the scientists and a reporter are out on the ice and they see that there's a spaceship under the ice. And they say, everybody spread out so that we can see the circumference of this spaceship before it's, you know, before they start blowing things up with thermite and bringing up all of these creatures and exposing the alien ship. And so they spread out, and it's remarkable, right? That how big and perfectly round this is. That sort of circular human construction shows up a couple of times in this movie. And it shows up in particular, surprisingly, with Fuchs. If you see that they do this kind of circular spreading out, looking at the monstrous in a way that is an homage to the 51 movie. And so there are these parallels. They are not eight, the 80s movie isn't happening in isolation from the 51 movie, which isn't happening in isolation from the 30s novella. They are all picking up these little threads and speaking to people who know these narratives from these different decades and pulling them in. So Fuchs's death is not just a death, but it also gives those who know the history of this film one more kind of, we know that you probably already know something about the 51 movie where James Arness is the monster who was in Gunsmoke. Do you know Gunsmoke?
I do know Gunsmoke.
No.
My mom used to watch that. She
Oh,
liked
Lord.
I know, which is not shame, but I used to watch it with her because she liked like the westerns and stuff. So Gunsmoke and what was the other one? There were the two big
Bonanza.
ones. Bonanza. She loved Bonanza. She loves it. Loves
Was
it.
this also like the same time? Was this like before or after? Because like they're like, we gotta move the like weird mutated corpse thing into like the storage room. And then no, this is after, right? This is like almost soon after. I don't remember. But like they find, and then also like while they're putting stuff in, someone goes up to Kurt Russell. We interchangeably use real names and character names.
That's Colonel
But he was
Russell.
just like, hey, we need to talk privately. And then what he is telling him is that the doctor discovered any part of them is still alive. I was like, that sounds like a group declaration that should have been made in front of the people trapped in the room with the now starting to regoop because it's like defrosted.
Right, not the guy who's in, not to the guy who's in like full blackout. That's my
Yeah.
head canon is that MacReady's like in a full blackout this whole movie. Like, I don't remember
Yeah.
any of this.
The things are still alive. What things?
He's like, what are you talking about? He's like, why is everything burnt down? It's like, oh God, like him and Child just sitting out in the wilderness.
But Childs is really important, right? There are these moments that are, I think that they do, it's a tightly edited movie, but they do a really good job of setting up who their characters are. So MacReady, yes, there's a lot of drinking that's going on. But if you remember, he's the only one that is playing chess in the
Sure.
opening scene. So they're setting him up as he's not just your typical pilot. He's playing chess while everybody else is playing ping pong or strumming on a guitar or just sort of sitting there, not literally playing with themselves, but playing with themselves, right? The rest of the base doing these sort of mindless activities, but he's playing chess. And that sets up an interesting relationship between MacReady and Childs, who is a lot like that Parker character from Alien, like, we're going to kill it. We're going to do it. Remember, they don't trust to give Childs weapons because they're like, you're too much of a hothead. But they also need Childs to have weapons when the monster's kind of out of control. They have him come with the flamethrower. But then it's Childs at the moment you're talking about, Sonique, who says, You don't buy into this voodoo bullshit, do you? And he says that twice. And that parallels really nicely with Knowles and his Buona lines, which he also says twice, because again, they're feeding you this history of the way Black people have shown up in horror. They've shown up in the 20s through the 40s and 50s as the sort of we're on jungle safaris and yes, Buona, here we are, Buona kind of thing. And then what happens in the 60s kind of moving forward, you know, like famously Serpent and the Rainbow, it's always about voodoo. And it's Childs who's like, you're not buying into this voodoo bullshit either, as a way to say, I know y'all always believe that it's got to be voodoo every time something goes wrong, so don't miss me with this. But he's also reminding that a lot of horror, especially where Black people show up, has to have some magical, mystical voodoo stuff. And Childs is shooting that down as well.
That's an excellent point. Yeah. Yeah, it definitely jumps out to me, the weapons line, though. It was like, again, like I mentioned earlier, I'm like, I feel like we're all hot-headed right now. Like, why are we singling this 1% out? But also there's that racial element as well. I was like, what does hot-headed mean to you? Because I'm like, you mean he's Black.
Yeah. It's like, he hadn't really shown himself to be hot-headed up until that point. I mean, it's like, I would rather him have the gun than the drunk pilot who's throwing drinks onto the computer because he lost the game.
So, to be fair, the only shooting we have seen so far has been a Norwegian that was just a screaming mess, and then the sheriff like archetype where maybe trust anybody else with the weapons.
So they you're talking about Gary, who's sort of running the base, right? Who shoots the Norwegian perfectly in the eye. And then there's MacReady, who shoots, what is his name? Clark.
He shoots Clark when he tries to get him with the scalpel.
Right, who wasn't a thing at all. So Childs hasn't shot anybody yet. Far them, right? From the alien as much as possible.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Yeah, he doesn't have a body count. And y'all were just missing. Poor Clark. Mm-hmm. R.I.P. Clark. I'm ready to get over that. I'm like, he wasn't even a thing, guys. Come on. So I think it's also the point when they decide to, we can jump ahead a little bit, but the test. Because before that, they had decided, okay, we're going to do this blood test. The blood, is suspiciously destroyed. So that's out of the window. But like, no. We're still going to do this because MacReady realizes that at the end of the day, this thing is also trying to survive. Like, I think that's what I like about this comparison to like Invasion of the Body Snatchers, where like they're a lot more like just organized and smart. And like, yes, we're all pod people and we have bureaucracy and we're like organized.
Right.
And this thing is really just like an animal. It's just like, it's just going to try to survive.
It was, so, I thought also super clever because like that scene where they're like trying to like resuscitate the dude and then his tummy opens up.
Oh God.
I was like, that was sick. And then they set him on fire and then his head departs to try to stay alive. And I thought that was insane that he goes, I had the idea when his head separated from his body that it is a series of independent organisms, so even a drop of its blood will try to stay alive. I was like, that, what a hypothesis.
Genius.
This is a chess playing drunk pilot.
Also, the first
time. This is the chess coming out.
The first time I've screamed at a movie in a very long time. That generally got me. I was just like, oh, that was not, did not see that coming. It was also an amazing special effects moment of just like it caving in and then like taking his arm off was beautiful. But yes, yeah, so they decide they're going to do this blood test, which this scene I know. But also, Andrew, we did The Faculty. And one thing I do love about watching an older horror movie is like seeing how that reference shows up in later stuff. And The Faculty has the test scene too, except with drugs instead of with the blood test. So they start doing it, and the tension in the scene is amazing. Because I also was sitting there like, you know, typically I feel like I try my best to guess like, oh, it's gonna be this guy. But I was genuinely sitting there like, wait, no, who the fuck is this thing though? Like,
especially
I'm truly upset.
Cause like, you know, we know Even, and this is for your future students, Robin, that won't do their homework and won't watch this movie. But like they've probably heard it referenced, and like I was like, yeah, like the blood like jumps out of the petri dish. I wholly didn't know that it was like a mini monster. And I was like, oh, geez.
No, it was amazing. And it was who was it? Was it Norris? Was that his name?
Nalls?
No,
TK Barnum's character?
the one who was the thing. I again didn't learn my
Oh.
names. There was guy with perm and
It
guy
was guy with
with
perm.
less perm. It
I
was
think it was guy,
two guys
no,
with
it
perms.
was guy with less perm.
Guy with less perm was the thing. And first thought too when I saw them, I was like, how are they keeping up that perm in Antarctica? Are you guys like just doing it? You're just like touching it up while you're up there. I don't know. But it's fully him and poor things, they're all tied together, which I was like, I don't know. I don't know if we thought this through well enough.
That's like one of the more, right, Mark, famous scenes from the thing, because there is the other thing is that the thing is funny. There's a lot
It
of humor in this movie. And one of the things that people say they're so glad John Carpenter kept, audiences are saying that he kept in the movie, it feels like a jump cut. Like it feels like it's a mistake, but it's not. And it's that as they're testing the blood, TK Carter's character, Knowles, is sitting on the couch and he's tied up. Once he's cleared, it's like a cut. And the next thing you know, he's standing next to MacReady and he's holding the flamethrower. And people, audiences really love that to this day. Those who are involved in the Thing fandom always point to that as one of the funniest moments in the film, that odd cut. Where there's TK, first it's MacReady, then it's TK Carter and MacReady, then it's TK Carter, MacReady, and Child. So they just keep cutting, and suddenly you're like, wait, when did they untie them? Where did this come from? These are the sort of humor moments that are also embedded in this film.
Yeah, I did notice that. I didn't notice it so much as a humor point, but it did jump out to me in terms of like, oh, like that
I like that
is
they made that
weird or
cut,
different.
and then like Keith David was just like untie me, untie me, and I was like, oh, and then yeah, they just untied him. We didn't need to see it happen, and then it just happened.
Yeah, it's. I mean, when you watch it, and again, who our listeners definitely watch this movie. It lives up. It lives up. The scene is. It's great. Even though I also knew it was coming, I was like, I was waiting for it, but it was like it was still delightful to
Right.
watch it in the greater context of the movie. It was amazing. He Foley is a thing, and I think he kills Windows too.
Yeah,
Yeah.
poor Windows.
R.I.P. Windows. Yeah, everyone. No crowd in
Actually,
this movie
this
is
scene,
great, I will
I did
say.
kind of laugh a little bit because it was just like, you know, he like full on chomps on Windows and then he's just kind of like walking around with Windows sticking out of his head. And I was like, after the initial shock, I was like, this is kind of silly. Because I just pictured like what the actor had to go through. I was like, this is kind of funny. And then everyone's just still tied up, like, oh my God. Or not everyone, but like just Gary. He's just like, please let me out of here. This is not great.
I like when Windows is like in the corner, he's just kind of covered with blood or whatever. I'm like, no one even bothers to check on him and like say, you know, is he really gonna turn or whatever? They just like flamethrow him,
Immediately.
just like set him on fire. Like, don't even ask any questions.
There's no time. We gotta go.
Yeah, though that was actually the best example of no hesitation. They're just like, set Windows on fire. And he's like, okay.
Well, yeah, maybe it was good that there was already this tension because everyone's disposable. They're like, set them on fire. I don't care. Didn't like them anyway. Get them out of here.
Think half of the movie's budget was fire, basically. It's like,
Yeah.
we got to set aside money for fire and for mouths. We got mouths and fire, just random mouths popping up everywhere.
Honestly, I think that would be my platform. I think we need more horror movies with flamethrowers, more fire. I'm like, I like this. This is fun. But after the shenanigans, they decide, okay, we have to go test Blair. He's still, we think, outside. So, Child, you stay. And I was like, no, like, don't leave Child, please. Because again, black guy dies first. He wasn't the first. I'm like, he has to die. Like, come on. Like, we got
He
two black
has to
guys.
die.
One of them got to go. Like, there's no way. And I'm like, please let it be Child. So, they leave him to stay on guard. But when they go out to see Blair, he's gone. He has escaped. And apparently he's been taking parts of the helicopter
Yeah, just making a cheeky
and
little spaceship. Because this thing, I also like to think, because like in, I feel most like stereotypical scenarios when like a thing or the alien or whatever is making their secret getaway vehicle, it's like it's always in a moment's notice that they're going to take off. This person had several, like tens of feet of snow that it's like, I will dig through this and then I will escape.
Yeah, I was wondering how long that's how long had this been going on?
Thing
It's a
Blair, yeah.
very thin plot point. It's only been a couple of days that he's been out there, and Hollywood does this around science. So Blair is a biologist. He doesn't know how to build a spaceship, right? I mean, that's what's I as a scholar, I feel like respect the boundaries of the discipline, you know?
Right.
And I'll give you an example. Breaking Bad, the TV series, right? He's a high school science teacher. Then he learns how to make meth. And then at the end of the series, just because he knows some parts of science, he now knows how to make a machine gun that can fire on its own at a certain trajectory. And if you duck down, you'll be safe. But if you're standing up, you're not. Like, that's not how disciplines work. So that this dude now knows how to make a spaceship because he's a biologist. It's they just are like Hollywood's always like science, science, science. It's all the same. You can probably do this. You can't. And then the other thing is how's he going to fly it out? He went
Yeah.
down under. So
Right.
how's he going to get up out of the snow? So I was like, oh, that's thin. We didn't need that. But nonetheless, that's what they do with science.
We
Well, he
love the.
also built a laser that will melt the ice because he's a
Oh, yeah.
biologist.
You
He
didn't
also
see that.
built,
Yeah.
they cut that part out, but he also built that to melt the ice and then fly the saucer
The scene I'm thinking
out.
about in particular from like or just the setup like in Gremlins or Faculty where it's the high school any science teacher but they are the expert on any
Yes,
science. It's
any
like, hey, I
science.
know it's the same, almost is the same setup. It's like, hey, Mr. Wilson, we found this weird organism behind the football field. And it's like, well, I actually studied math and somehow ended up substituting for years in the science department. But let me tell you, oh, that's this genus, and you can tell, but it's a little different. Like, and I'm like, shut up. But that's, yes, every scientist knows everything that could
Everything,
ever be
absolutely
related to
everything.
science.
That's very true. My husband is he majored in physics and chemistry, and I'll tell you, there's a lot of things he does not know. And like that
But
was eye-opening. I'm like, oh,
there
I
is a spaceship in your guest room that he's been building for a
been
while.
building for a very long time. So anyway, they find this saucer and they're like, all right, so we have to destroy this because you're not getting out. Don't forget the ice. We're gonna make sure you're not getting out. And they kind of decide like this might be a suicide mission. We might all die doing this, but like we do need to stop this because Blair had already established like no, if this thing gets out, like it's taking over like the world very quickly. Like we can't let this thing out. So and at that point, I actually thought they had died. I was like, oh, this is the end of oh, okay. And they didn't, but they did destroy it. They also find that Childs is missing. So at this point, they decide like, okay, so the thing must be last ditch effort. It's been cornered. It's like it's gonna go back into hibernation until surely someone will come back. It knows
That's
humans.
also
They're like, someone's gonna
that's how
come.
I give up too. I just take a little nap. I was like, life's too hard. Let me just take a quick little nap.
Like someone will take care of this, I'm sure. I'll wake up and my work will be done. I just know it. All the writing I want to do, it's like, it's fine. I just take a nap. I'll wake up. It's done. No problem. So, but they're like, we can't let that happen. Like it can't be allowed to escape. So we start setting explosives around the station. And now we get the clear parallel what happened with the Norwegians. They had the same idea and it didn't work.
Yeah.
So, and I know there's other stations in Antarctica. So I'm like, y'all better call the Chinese, the Russians, because I don't, they're chilling and waiting and their shit's gonna happen too. So they're blowing it up. They're getting ready. Gary gets killed, unfortunately. That was a good kill though.
Oh yeah.
It was a fun,
I
surprising
love
one. That one got me.
Well, Knowles gets killed as well.
And
And
Knowles
that's
is
a
killed.
sort of interesting death because we don't see it in the final cut of John Carpenter's film, right? So we like Knowles just disappears, but we don't see that. And I think that there's something cool about that in a contemporary context when you're thinking about complaints around torture porn, right? And the sort of annihilation of Black bodies and how that is happening in mod in today's horror films. And we're spared that. What we do know is that Carpenter was going to kill off, or does kill off Knowles, and we see it where it's really kind of grisly, and he takes this piece of wood that's all splintery and fractured, sticks it in his neck, and draws it across his throat to kill himself before the monster gets to him. So we're spared that. And I think that's right because we see that the Norwegians, one of the sort of bodies in the Norwegian camp, we've already got that kind of cut the throat scene where he has killed himself with a straight razor, right? So he cuts both of his wrists, then he cuts his throat with the straight razor, and then he freezes. So we don't need another one of those, and we don't need to see that actually happen to know that Knowles doesn't make it. So in some ways, there's some really good choices in the thing that I kind of like, because Black people don't typically get these kinds of both survival moments or death moments. And so I do like, we know Knowles didn't make it, but we didn't need the kind of torture porn scene to evidence that.
I did very much appreciate this movie. You don't see any black person die.
You don't. You don't. And I mean, which also brings us to our conclusion, a very surprising, and which I did not expect this movie to end this way. I was, again, used to the trope. I'm like, well, Childs is good. He's gonna like die, or like they're gonna have to stand off. Like, what's like, something bad has to happen to Childs at this point. There's no way he's gonna get this far. But after the rest of the team is killed, and they've MacCready has destroyed the station. He's sitting back just by himself, and Childs appears, and he's like, yeah, I got lost in the storm, but I'm here. And they both just kind of accept their fate together. They're like, yeah, we're probably not gonna get rescued. Let's just see what happens. And they share a drink, and it just like, and I was like, you know, I think if I was told that was the ending originally, I would have been disappointed by just hearing it. But watching it was weirdly satisfying. I'm just like, yeah.
Because he was also like, he was like, it'd be crazy if one of us was the thing. And then the other one's like, what could we do about it if we were, if we weren't? And then it's like, I guess we'll find out. And
Yeah.
then he was like, whiskey that I've had the entire time.
Of course, MacReady has the drink. His
Yeah.
final, he opened with a drink and he ended with a drink.
Yeah.
And what's shocking? Full bottle. That's actually the most magical part of the movie.
Right. I was
Never
like,
diminished.
is that a new bottle you just cracked open or what? Because I know that's not full. Which I guess was Cabin in the Woods kind of nodding to that at the end of that? When they like they share a joint and they're just like, well,
Well, yeah, because they're gonna die.
we're
Yeah.
gonna die. And they just hang out and it's the end. And I loved it. Like, I don't know. I was trying to think like, well, and everything doesn't have to have a deeper meaning, but I was trying to like dig into like, well, what is being implied here when you see this? And what is the itch that's being scratched in this with this ending? Because I haven't, it's an ending I feel like that should have been dissatisfying, but was weirdly just like, yeah, this is how it should have ended.
So I think it talks back to certainly Night of the Living Dead, right? And the ways in which we were rooting for Ben, and then Ben gets killed, not even by the monsters, but by a white militia, right? So it's like, okay, we're not going to do this sort of annihilation that we see in Night of the Living Dead. The black guy isn't going to die first. Actually, the black guy's not going to die at all. And I think that's probably one of the most important pieces, if you're interested in Black representation, that the thing offers up is that there's this long decades and decades long history where Black people are just sort of it, just as we say, it's fodder, right? They're just you know, body counts. And the thing is, like, not this time. Nobody sees it coming that Childs is going to be, everybody thinks Kurt Russell is going to live, but right. nobody sees Childs coming, right, at all. And then to the point where there's so much, I think you as audiences are interesting because we've been talking about a lot of movies, science fiction, some fantasy, some horror, where some audiences are still not ready for Black characters. And so everything from The Little Mermaid to, you know, The Thing, people are pushing back against Black characters. So Childs lives to the point where people are like, oh no, we can't have a Black survivor, that there's a whole kind of fan fiction literature about how Childs is the thing because MacReady has, you know, sort of the frosty air coming out of his mouth when he's talking. Mm-hmm. And you don't see that with Childs. So there's now, like, if you look kind of out online, there are these people who are arguing about this because they're saying, well, Childs is tucked in behind sort of the wall and a pillar, and his air is a little bit more, his speech is blocked a little bit and it's burning. So that's burning off the frost, the condensation that's coming out of his mouth. And other people are like, it just means the Black guy's monstrous and he's really a monster. So all of this is happening around MacReady and Childs. It's wow. huge in fan fiction about, or fandom land, about what this ending means racially, which I think is really interesting. And so though Carpenter leaves it open, we don't know who the thing is or if there is a thing, people have sought to fill in the blanks for this movie and have put the monstrous in Childs.
Wow. The mental gymnastics people will go through to Childs bat. I saw recently, like, because I was, you know, I'm also a creature that exists now with the internet. I was like, who's the thing at the end? And, you know, they're like, no one knows, like John Carpenter knows, but no one but him knows. And then, but I saw this theory where they're like, oh, well, there's this one person that worked on the set said, like, oh, when the humans are depicted, they have this lighting that hits their eyes, like this type of lighting, but you don't see it when it's the thing. And Childs, like, based on the lighting in the final scene, Childs, I was like, what?
This sounds a lot like Taylor Swift is gay fandom. Gaylers, like, just like, huh? Like, okay, like, let's all go touch grass, guys. Like, what are we talking about now? It
sounds hard. There's all this debate about MacReady and Childs, but for me, since in the final cut, we never really do see Knowles die, in my mind, he's still roaming around on the periphery. I mean, in my mind, he could be the thing. He could come in and swoop in and kill them both, and then that's it. It's Knowles. That's my
so conspiracy theory. We had the preview thing, which is the 2011. Now we need the actual sequel, which is just, it's a 5-minute short, and it's just Knowles coming out of nowhere, I mean, like, I'm the thing, and eats them both, and then he just sits crisscross applesauce waiting for the rescue team to show up.
I think we're all kind of the thing deep down inside. The thing is all of us.
The friends were the things we met along the way.
Yeah. Think about
and it. And also playing superstition, and superstition ties in with alien, supernatural. So that's the clue right there.
Someone had mentioned the Incans at one point. You see, you got to put it together.
And then there's that one
hat on.
There's that one Hellraiser movie where it takes place in space, and that spaceship, you can actually see it crash landing in the back if you, like, pause it really quickly.
And also in Cloverfield, like, Clover is actually, like, when she lands in the sea, that's actually, like, an offshoot of that because, like, you know, like, is...
Not many people know that every alien horror movie is a multiverse. The original multiverse.
We all exist in the same universe. Man. So usually
this would be the duo to ask, or yes, if they have any takes.
Usually when we watch a movie, we always ask, because, you know, representation is not always there. We always ask, if this were a Black movie, how would it be different? And how would you rewrite it? We have Black characters in this one, which is fun. But also, like, what do you think? If you could, if you were John Carpenter, and you said, no, I don't want any white people in this movie, everybody's going to be Black, how would it be different? Or would it be different?
Mark?
Well, first the title would be Do Up That Thing. And Lauryn Hill would be the star. And the movie would be delayed a year because they could never get her on set. But it would eventually come out. But I mean, I think for its time, the thing was really, progressive in terms of its black portrayals. I mean, they had not one but two, quote unquote, black guys, and depending on your point of view, they both live until the end. In my mind, Knowles is still alive, roaming around in the Arctic. I mean, I think it's pretty, for its time, it's pretty cool as it is. I mean, I think if you have black people in it, I think it wouldn't exist because black people wouldn't be in the Antarctic. It wouldn't even be down there. I think it would take place in the Caribbean and it would have something like, people on vacation, in a resort or something, and it would turn into, I still know what you did last summer or something like that. So
Brady's in
I
it.
think that's right. I mean, so we've seen not an all black cast, but we have seen more modern movies where there are like two black actors. What is it? Deep Blue Sea, which has Samuel L. and LL. And if you think about those, this compared to that, the thing compared to Deep Blue Sea, the thing far and away is a better film. And it's sort of interesting that people like there's a meme that's circulating with LL's picture, and it's like, this it comes out around Black History Month, and it's something like, for Black History Month, we celebrate the first black guy to make it to the end of a movie, and there's a picture of LL. And then I get every February, people blood this to me and go, Dr. Robin, is this true? And I'm like, no. And like, there's so many films that where the black guy does live, right? But the thing is, one of the standout ones. So I think one Mark is 100% right. For its time, it is progressive, but also it seems to be that for our time in 2024, it's also rather progressive because we haven't seen huge improvement. We've seen the horror genre go kind of cyclical in its treatment of black characters. And Deep Blue Sea is a really good example where we're just, LL's character Preacher is slightly better than the kinds of things we saw in that kind of 40s comedy era of the way black people show up in horror. He's a little better. You don't see that at all in The Thing. And in fact, what you see is, overt articulation of pushing back with the Bwana statement, the voodoo statement, pushing back against those kinds of representations. So I think actually The Thing kind of gets it right. And I also think Mark is right. If it becomes an all black cast, it is going to be set in the Caribbean. And I also think like Madea is going to show up. That's where we're at today, like with his
Oh,
film. So you're
Lord.
right. Like, where are the black women? Well, you laugh, but Madea's Halloween, it made like our top 10 list of box office
Did.
sales. So people are dismissive all the time of Tyler Perry for, but somebody, like people are going to see that.
They do.
And that's also where some of, not a lot, but some of our black women are being represented, are in these kind of
Damn. This was, I cannot stress, the smartest take on anything I have ever heard said on this podcast. I
No.
know because I'm there almost all the time. I also, Mark, when you brought back the Lauryn Hill version of the thing, I think we need to start a new trend of just like the classic literature where it's like Pride and Prejudice and zombies, or like Hamlet and zombies. We need that, but with the thing, so it could be like Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing in all caps, and just like inserting the thing into as much content as we can. The thing's gonna have a resurgence.
I can see it. I can see it. Oh my God. So that was a fantastic conversation. Before we let you all go, we'll be back next week with Alien. So I'm loving how all these movies are kind of having a good link. So it's going to be fun to really dig more into the alien conversation as we touched on a little bit today. Before you go, is there any, I mean, we are a very small podcast, so like anything you want to plug, because I can just like add the
Yeah,
clout.
if you have any like social media presences you want to share, if
Yes,
you
or
want to
anything,
share your the course number so people can sign up for it.
or any interesting talks people might want to check out if they're, in your in their area or something, anything.
I'm going to plug that Mark and I are actually collaborating again. We have an edited, I have a co-editor, Novotny Lawrence, and we have the Oxford Handbook on Black Horror Films that's coming out this year. And
Amazing.
Mark has a fantastic essay in this collection. So Mark is putting on his scholar hat for us, and you really should check it out.
Yes. Yeah,
Absolutely.
it's a black horror from more of a global perspective. So we venture outside the US and look at black horror that way. So yeah, it's interesting.
Oh, that's really cool. That's
Excited.
exciting.
Spooky Squad, get all of their writings wherever you can. Don't find it free on the internet. Pay for it. Use code
Yes.
Spooky Squad to get truly no discount. We have no pull anywhere.
No pull, but no, check out the books, check out The Black Guy Dies First. And also check out Horror Noir and the documentary as well. I think it's on Shudder, yeah?
It's streaming everywhere.
Yeah, so check it
I hope
out.
it's on Tubi when I say that. I really hope Horror Noir is on Tubi. Somebody will have to check, but I'm just like, I think I feel like I will have arrived if it's on Tubi.
I hope it is. I also watched the thing on Tubi and it was very distracting, the ads. Thank God. Between, I kept getting ads on home insurance. So, I don't know,
Also, you
not
should all
related.
of you should write your own little essay for fun. Instead of journaling and diarying, write an essay about black horror. That'd be
Yes,
fun.
send it to
And it's
us. We
black
will read
horror,
it.
it's blackhorrormovies.com. Correct? That's your
Exactly.
and make sure you cite that. Cite that source. And we're an APA podcast, if you could.
Okay, true.
I would die if someone's like just responded to our Instagram and is like, "Hey, this is a link to a Google Doc of this 5-page essay I wrote." I would read it.
I
I
said I
would read
wouldn't
it.
read it, but I would read it. I love reading people's, like, I love reading homework. It's kind of fun. But thank you all so much for listening. Before we really get off, we always like to leave with any last words that you might have.
Well, as people don't always die first in our movies, so keep that in mind. Keep hope alive.
Keep hope alive.
That's perfect. I'll let Mark have the last word.
No, I love it. Keep hope alive, guys. Thank you so much for listening and stay spooky, y'all.
Hey, spooky.